compare that to, say, what a trapper might make. If a trapper's in a season, what's a typical year going to be like?
Well, you know, you didn't get like working in the mines, you know, if you made $600-$700, you know, and if you had a good season, you know, from April till maybe sometime later part of September or October, you know. But then fur wasn't, when I come around here, fur wasn't too bad. You know, you could, it wasn't real high either. But you'd get probably $15 for a good mart and all the way from $5 to $35, $40 for a good fox. It had to be a good, you know, or red maybe bring $10, $12 and a cross. And wolves wasn't worth nothing. You'd get $7, $8 for a wolf. But they had a $20 bounty on them. And Wolverine the same way. All you get $7, $8, $6 for a Wolverine, but they had a $15 bounty on them. But mink wasn't very good, you know, at that. $6, $7, $8, $10 maybe. In link, stuff like that, they'd be pretty good every once in a while. Of course, it all depends on the style, you know.
So a typical trapper, I know a trapper, some guys catch a lot of fur and some guys don't catch much at all. But say a typical guy that's going to go trapping, you know, what would he figure he might make in a season?
Well, you know, it was in a good country and everything like that where they, a lot of guys, rats and beaver and all that, they'd do pretty good, you know, and they'd get a lot of mink and that. They, you know, a couple of $1,000 is nothing, you know. They'd make that easy, you know. But then, you know, when they hit them ears, no rabbits and stuff like that, them cycles, you know, you didn't do too good. You just about get by, you know. I know when I started in trapping, that's about that hit them ear, you wouldn't make nothing, you know. But at one time, you know, like in the 20s, you know, when that fur was real high, you know, they were getting, for silver foxes and all that, you know, they were getting an enormous price for them, you know, as high as $1,000, you know, for a fox, you know. And that's when a dollar was a dollar, too. That's a fact, you know, and $500, $600, you know, $100 for a red fox, and big money they were getting for fur then. $200-$300 for a cross.
How long a line would a guy have?
Well, they had long lines, and you got to have a pretty good line in this country, you know, to make any money. It's not, you got, they all had pretty big lines. The real successful trappers, you know, had dog teams and cabins and lines, you know, and they, every year, you know, they worked them, you know, had good lines.
So then what would a long line be considered, 60 miles, 100
well,
miles?
Yeah, they'd, 100 miles is nothing, you know. You could 100 miles easy, you know. That wasn't, you know, you had to have lots of country to get over. You know, you'd have all these straight lines, and then you'd run your branch lines, you know. And you had to have quite a bit of country. Well, some country was better than others. You'd get a lot of country was pretty good, you know. Then you'd get a lot of this hungry country, lots of open country, you know. You know, too good, you know. But it took a lot of fur, you know, some years when the price wasn't worth nothing. Like the first year I was here, rats was $4 or $5 for a dollar. That's all you could get for muskrats. Well, right now they're $5, $6 a piece, you know. That's the difference. Mm-hmm. And I sold lots and lots of beaver blankets and for $8, you know. Mm. Lots of mink in that for $7, $8.
Where do you usually sell your fur?
Oh, guys would come through. There used to be an old guy come through. You've been here for years, John Swagler. We used to sell him lots of fur. And then the NC company would buy fur. That was their... They'd buy anything, you know, all the fur. And then a lot of guys would ship outside. A lot of them would ship to Mass and Stephens, you know. That was an old outfit in Seattle. I shipped to them, too. And they were a pretty reliable outfit. and some would ship to the Seattle Fur Exchange. Everybody had their own.
Well, how would things work out if you sold your furs to the NC company?
They paid just about as good as anybody, and probably sometimes a lot better, you know, because a lot of guys buy in their stuff too, you know, and they give you a better break. And like now, you could send your furs out to West Coast too. Grocery, you know, they had auctions. They take them. In Sears and Roebuck would too. They had auctions. They take them, and they sell them for you at a 2% or 3% or something like that. And if you wanted to order clothes, you just told them what you need and send you to whatever you had coming back. That went on for quite a while, and then they quit it.
Do you notice much of a difference between the way, say, Native guys around here trapped and the way the white guys trapped?
Well, they more or less, you know, not for years when I was, they were like everybody. They got out and rustled good, you know, went out, moved out with their tents and families, you know, and they stayed right out, you know. The snow goes spoil most of them, too, like the rest of them, you know. They all want to trap out of town. They'd get out and rustle. Everybody, then you had to more or less when you had dogs, you know. Wow. And fish in the summer, feed the dogs, or...
Well, how did things change, like when people had kids that had to go to school, like for yourself, when you had a family, that changed your life?
Well, a lot of them, they take, you know, like the, they just take them out of school, have to, you know, and move out in the woods. They had to get out there. There wasn't all this work around these towns, you know. You had to rustle all the time. Yeah, they just have to, they take them out, and then they come back, they'd put them back into school, or then, of course, they had those vocational schools, like a Clutton, and there, a lot of them would go to, they send them to school there, and, but the dollar come a little harder at that time, you know, it wasn't all this gravy, and there was, I don't ever remember of any relief when I first come around here. The territory put out a little pension to the guys that you practically had to be helpless to get it, you know. Of course, there was no Social Security or none of that, you know. You could live all right, you know, but you more or less had to rustle, you know. There was all this, you could do something, you know, like there was in a winter like here, and there was other parts of the country too, you know, or their drift mine in a winter, you know, guys that cut the wood for the mines, and then that's when they'd work in a winter too, and it drifts a lot, guys would work out there, and in cut wood, they'd cut steamboat wood along the river. See, they had them steamboats, and they'd burn a lot of wood. They always let out a few cards, you know, contracts all over, you know. And trapping and then working the mines in the summer, and they'd fish and work on these roads, like for the old road commission. And
seems like there's always something to keep a guy busy.
Yeah, you could always make a dollar, you know, live, that is.
Well, now, how about the, do you want to follow up on your question then? Or, okay. How about people right here in Manly? Seems like, say, 20 years ago or something like that, you know, there's maybe the population wasn't all that high, and maybe there's not really all that much mining going on as far as prospect and stuff. But there's, say, 15 or 20 people living here over the winter.
Well, there was the people that did stay, you know. Most of them was guys, they had some kind of a job, you know. They probably worked in a mine in the summer. Well, they'd buy their, they'd make enough to know to live during the winter. And then, like you say, guys like me, I never stayed here much. I'd go out trapping, you know. I'd move, and there was different guys the same way, you know. Then come back in the spring, you know. And then, of course, in the spring of the year, the work would open up, they'd go work out in the mines or doing something, you know, or someplace go to work. And but the old road commission used to hire a lot of guys, you know, not right around this particular place, but out of Fairbanks, you know, on the them highways and building new roads. And a lot of guys that even go Gandhi dancing on a railroad, you know, and everything. And guys that go work on a steamboats, like from Tannen, a lot of guys that go work on a steamboat, you know, deckhands and other boats, you know, is on a river too.
So if guys got their winter supplies and say, for instance, they work during the summer and they got all their, I mean, they could live over the winter.
Oh,
they
yeah.
So, and they're living here in Manly. Say, for instance, there's 15 people or something. What do they do mostly?
Well, most of the guys that did stay in, they didn't do nothing. They just waited till summer to go back to work. That's about all. Cut a little wood for themselves and
visit around. And,
yeah, you know, just party around. All this party and yeah. Play cards and. They'd get the at that time, you know, the people that stayed here all the time, they'd have a lot of parties, you know. The roadhouse, like say, that would stay open all the time. They'd go over there and play cards that night, pan or pinochle or have a little poker game, and they'd have big feed, you know, or holiday or dance and get beard up, you know, that course.
Yeah. Well, you remember any of those people? I mean, you know, you always sometimes get in trouble talking about other people, but there's any kind of, stories about typical kinds of people? For instance, just to give an idea, we were talking to Bob Kemp, and he said, well, there's this guy that lived here. His name was Edgerton. What is it? Ross and Tuffy.
Well, yeah, they didn't live here. They'd come through here. They mined down below Tannen on Golden Creek and through there, Grand Creek, Golden Creek.
And then I guess there's Gus Benson's... let's see, over the winter, who else is staying here?
Well, there was different guys, like talking about pension, the old timers, you know, there were several here all the time. They were already that they was through working, you know what I mean? Their working days was over. Well, they couldn't really work, you know. They're crippled up or something, I'd say. And there was quite a few of them around. Not a lot of them. There's probably 7, 8, 10 or something like that, you know, live here. And they raised a garden in the summer and everything. And they lived good off in it, you know. Of course, it was at that time, they didn't get much of a pension. Of course, I think they'd run from about $40 to $60 a month. That's about all they'd get. Of course, that went a little bit further, you know, than, but you had to close yourself and everything out of there. You had to have your own house, a cabin, and a lot of them cut their own wood yet. And but it didn't take, at that time, you know, it didn't take, seemed like people didn't live quite so high as they do now. It didn't take quite so much money. You can get by pretty good, you know. Watch the buck, you know.
Uh-huh. Well, what kind of expenses would a guy have here? He cuts his own wood, he doesn't have to pay for oil.
Well, yeah, that's all you have to do is buy your groceries and... Uh-huh. Well, if you wanted some refreshments or something like that, that was the only... Of course, you couldn't buy much refreshments if he was on a small pension. But then the guys that lived here, you know, worked all the time. Even if they didn't work in a winter, you know, if they did go broke, they all had good credit, you know, at the roadhouse or at the store. Or when they went to work, well, they'd pay up, you know. And you never, if you paid up, you know, you never had to worry about credit in this country. That is one thing. The old NC company, that used to be a good reel. They carry these guys, you know, and a lot of stuff, you know. Well, a lot of individual Stewart, you know, stores, you know. Of course, you couldn't give it to everybody. You had to know who you had crooks them days at Beaches as well as you got them now.
I have a couple questions I wrote down here. Like, well, one of them was when you talked about traveling from Sawtooth, there's that one year where half the trip, that 75 miles, and half of it was on bare ground.
Oh, that's with dogs when I come out from Livengood one time, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering, what was that springtime and you were trying to get back?
Yeah, I was trapping up there on the West Fork and I was coming in here. I was going to see, it's a summer year and it was breaking up and I had to get in here. The creeks are starting to get full of water and everything, you know, and cross them and everything. And there wasn't much snow that winter. That was one winter year. There wasn't hardly any snow either.
So do you ever have times when, say it was breakup and you had, you know, you got stuck out there because you couldn't get in soon enough? Or you ever have close calls going across the water? Or?
Well, a lot of times, like, you'd have to wait, you know. I'd get stuck, you know, trying to get out. Water would let the water go down like at night, it would cool off, you know, like how it gets warm in the daytime and the snows would be melting and cool off. And well, you'd have to a lot of times wait them, you know, or fall, you know. Of course, if you didn't have dogs, you could always go around there different time or two. I had to just turn the dogs loose, you know, and let them follow you, you know, and follow and wherever you could, you know.
So you would just be walking and
That's the way you'd have to go.
You'd leave your sled behind?
Yeah, I'd leave it in some old cabin or something, you know. That didn't happen, though, too often, only a time or two on me. I always managed to get out before breakup, you know.
The times you had to let your dog loose, what you do with what you're bringing furs and things into?
Well, a lot of times I didn't have much, you know. I'd already got rid of my stuff, you know. I'd be just out there waiting for, you know, breakup to pass their time and away the winter, you know, the rest of the winter. Trips like that, very seldom I had much to bring out in my bedding and all that. I just hang it up in the cabin and leave it, or cash, you know. We'd, most generally everybody had their, like, out. But then a lot of guys would come out as on these creeks, you know. They'd come out right after breakup with boats, you know, and then they'd come later. They'd wait till the creeks had completely all the ice out of them, you know. But I always come out with dogs, you know, come on plenty of time. Because a lot of years and I was out there, we do a little, when trapping was over, we do a little prospecting, you know, just get on some creek and sink a few holes, you know, and trying to find something.
Those times you just stay out then.
Yeah, we just stay out, you know, just want to live out there, you know, instead of being around town.
Let's see that clock, Stan.
Huh?
Well, when you talk about dogs, one of the things I was wondering is, you know, when you were first running dogs, what kind of harnesses and things did people have?
We had all, at that time, most guys, we had what you call a work harness. You have a collar and tugs and traces, you know. A lot of them use these racing harnesses, but a dog can't pull with them, you know, like you can with a work harness.
So it's a work harness, leather?
Yeah, regular collar, heavy collars, you know, practically built something like a horse collar, you mind, like a horse harness, you know.
So they used to order those from outside, or did they make their
own? Well, you could make your own. A lot of guys would make them out of webbing, but you'd buy the collars. More generally, you bought the collar. They had all different types. Some guys used a breast band, you know, for the dogs, and they had all different kinds of But that I use them all the time, and because the dog could work better, and I never, never had no real big teams, you know, stuff like that. But that's mostly what all the guys would use.
Yeah, I've never seen anybody these days.
You don't see them anymore, no. I was, I had a bunch of that stuff here to up there a few years, and I don't know who I give it to, but I was looking in a Alaska Sportsman here one day, and some guy from Michigan was at, and he wanted to get one of the mole harnesses. And I don't know if there's any around the country. There must be some around someplace, you know. But
you mean those kind that look like horse collars?
Yeah, with a horse, regular.
See, where'd we see one of those?
We saw a picture.
Oh no, I know. I saw them. I went up to the lake claim over there, past Tofty.
Woodchopper?
Yeah.
Well, it's possible in some old cabin you could find some maybe yet. Or
one of those burned down places. I just kicked around stuff, and here I saw one down there in the ground.
See, everybody used them around here, pretty everybody. See, like these harnesses now, they use these race, they call them race harnesses, you know. Well, of course, a dog don't tangle up as much in them, and you got lots of dogs, well, it's all right, you know, but they can't work in them like this. We call them work harnesses.
I mean, it drags on the dog too much?
Or? Huh? Well, you see how they are built, how the dog is in them, you know, they're all squeezing them together. Well, you didn't with those, you know. You had a single tree behind, you know, and you had the collar, and that was stiff. A dog could really work with it, you know. It's just same as anybody, you know, you're in something tight, you can't, and that's just about all. You can see how these harnesses are. A dog is bound in there, like in a straitjacket. They ain't too good for when it really comes to working. Or light, you know, there's a lot of them running light. It's a different deal.
Or are the sleds different too?
No, they're the same type of sled. Same type, yeah. That ain't changed any.
How about the kind of dogs?
Well, see, everybody then, most everybody went for, they had bigger dogs. More. See, these dogs are mostly for racing, small, light dogs, you know, like, of course, like Rick Swanson. Now, see, he's got bigger dogs because they, on that long run, you know, and everything. And they, that's about average dogs that run like that, you know, and bigger, a lot of guys. Of course, trappers, they wasn't in no hurry, you know what I mean? They didn't, you had your traps, and then a lot of guys only had a few dogs, two, three, or four, and they had, a lot of them had big dogs, good dogs, you know. Like I had, I didn't have real big dogs, but fair-sized dogs, you know.
Like what would the dog weigh, maybe?
Well, you'd say 60, 65 pounds or more, you know. Maybe, well, then you'd run up, there's 75, 80 pounds. A lot of guys that go to the real good dogs, you know, big dogs, 100 pounds or more, you know, big. But then you don't need many of them, you know, where you're trapping, you're not in no hurry, and you got to tend your traps. And but then where these guys, when they were hauling mail, they had big dogs, you know, pretty good-sized dogs, because they're bringing big loads, you know. They'd be haul freight also with the mail.
So that trail's kept up pretty good, though, on that mail trail. They're hauling.
Huh?
If they're hauling on the mail trail with dogs, that's a pretty good trail, huh?
Well, yeah, most generally. There was a lot of dogs in the country, and there's a lot of traffic over the road. There was practically all the time, there was a good trail, you know. Somebody was going someplace all the time, you know.
Well, like, for instance, these guys that run the Iditarod, they say that there's so many dogs go over that trail that there's nothing but one line of shit all the way from Anchorage to Nome.
Well, I don't know. There's a lot of it, all right. You know that. We're all dogs going all the time. You're right there. But they were, see, they're just one right behind another, but we're talking about the traffic. It wasn't that crowded, you know what I mean? There was sometimes you'd go for several days. There wouldn't be a team over the trail, you know. especially if a big snow would come at some night, a foot or two of snow, then they'd always wait for the mail driver to break the trail. He was stuck because he had to make his rounds. Of course, they always had big teams, you know, lots of dogs, you know, and a lot of time you get a lot of snow, they'd have to get some guy go ahead, you know, break it down, give the chatting dog, you know, they'd have a big load, you know. And
so now, could somebody else stay in the mail cabin?
Oh, yeah, any cabin that was around, like, they had a lot, the government built a lot of cabins, you know, they called the mail cabins. Well, they were open to anybody, that was anybody's cabin, but the mail drivers used them all the time.
How did people treat those mail cabins? Did they leave food?
No, they didn't. You know how people were, some guys would leave wood and everything. You had to have your own food and everything. And if he left any wood, the next guy would come, he'd maybe burn it up. And they, but as a rule, a lot of guys is pretty good, you know. They'd always leave a little bit of something, you know. But you'd get out away from the traffic, you know, off these main trails, like on these trapping trails, or was used a little, of course, in prospectors. Any cabin you'd come to, there'd be cooking utensils in it. There'd be a good stove in it. There'd be frying pans and coffee pot or cans or kettles of some kind. And there'd always be some kind of bedding in there, a few blankets hanging up. Or there'd be a little grub. There'd be some coffee, tea, or some salt and sugar, and maybe some rice. Or there'd always be something in there that if you hit that place hungry, there'd be enough in there to get a few meals, you know. There'd be matches, and most generally all of them, there'd be some wood there in them places. There'd be sometimes a lot of wood and sometimes a lot of grub. All depends who left. If a guy would say trapping and he had grub, he'd just leave it. So would a prospector. They wouldn't haul much out. Damn little. You'd hit him sometimes. There's quite a bit of food in there, you know.
So in those days, it seems like it would have been pretty hard for a person to be really stuck. If they were out traveling, they'd always could come up on a cabin or something.
You could, when I first come around, all them trails are pretty good yet, you know. There's always somebody been out in the winter or somebody was trapping on them, you know. And you could follow them easy, and all the cabins would be in good shape, pretty good shape. You know what I mean? They'd be up in, like in late years is where they all went to hell, you know, caving in, you know, and roofs and everything. Nobody out much in them anymore, you know. But you could always, all them cabins would be pretty good, you know. Especially if you was around someplace in a, like around your mining district and that are out, you know. There's always somebody going out prospecting, and the cabins would be good, you know. Or you'd go around these mines, you know, where guys pulled out in the winter. Some stayed there all the time, you know, around the mines, lived there. You'd always find plenty of food and stuff like that, you know. It wasn't, at that time, it was pretty good. Oh, you'd find some bird would come through and eat everything up and burn up the wood and leave everything dirty too, you know. They wasn't all that, like I say. You had their share of them.
So you'd let that guy know if there was a guy going ahead of you, and say he's going over to Rampart or something, and you get into Rampart and you find out this guy got there just the day before, and you're cleaning up after him all the way.
Well, the guys would know. You just about something knew who was doing it, you know, because you'd know who was over the trail. You'd always know printed every move a guy made, you know, because there wasn't too much moving around, and somebody knew where the guy was or seen him, or he come into his town or something, you know. Or when I was like when I trapped, well, West Fork there, even see there's Live and Good, of course, is a pretty big camp in that time, and they'd still guys that walk go up there prospect in the summer, they'd walk the Rampart or something like that, you know. And all the, we'd always leave grub and printed all the time. Some guy had come through, he'd always take what he wanted and never did hit anybody, you know, that would clean you out. But you had guys would pull that stuff too, you know. like around these rivers now where you had all these floaters and that, you couldn't hardly leave too much around a house than a cabin. They'd, so many guys up and down. But when I was trapping up Hess at all them cabins, see, that's out of the way in there, you know, and I always left food in every cabin. I'd hang something up, you know, the bears couldn't get it. And never just, I don't think I ever had anybody yet come in the cabin. And they just, nobody went through there at that time. I was out of the way, you know, and never cleaned me out.
So is anybody out there now?
Oh, there's guys in there. I don't know who's in there, but I talked to different guys. Said, yeah, there's guys running all over.
Guys from Rampart?
Not from Rampart so much, but like when I was up to West Fork, you know, they go from McConnell's in there. They're up there. There's good roads in there now, you know, them cat trails and all that. I went in there myself with cats, you know, we was prospecting. And then hauled ore out of the Sawtooth, and now they run over them with snow goes, you know, as a regular boulevard, you know.
So cats really changed things.
Oh, yeah, they made a lot of roads, you know, and that made it easy for a lot of them. Yeah.
Guys ever set traps right in their trail in order to keep other people from using it?
Well, I don't know. Like years ago, I don't know. You never see when you was trapping with dogs. You made a lot of trail sets, especially where you had wolves and fox. See, they follow your trail, you know, behind the dogs and that. And you just had no business on another guy's trail if you had a dog team, because you don't know what you'd run into. You just had no business.
Yeah, because I heard some guys around, this was a couple years ago, there in Livengood, maybe it's one of your old trails or something, but there's a guy trapping out of there, and there's other people around there that were running their dogs, and I think there might have been training them up or something, you know, and this guy was coming in from Fairbanks, I think, and he'd go out on those trails, and he'd put wolf sets right in the trail. He didn't want anybody around.
Well, that's sticking your neck out there, you know, if somebody would catch you and break your neck.
Well, they were pretty mad, but they felt like the guy kind of had him over a barrel because they couldn't risk losing one of their dogs.
Mm-hmm. Well, you take, if a guy's got his own trail now, like a guy's got his own trap and cuts his trail, now you got no business on it. That's the way I look at it. Stay off in the other guy's trail, but they don't do that, you know. But as far as these roads now, like all these roads around you, well, you can't say, well, this is my trap line, start setting traps on a road, and because the road belongs to anybody. It's a public road right there where you're a dog team or anybody, which I wouldn't set the traps on it. But where I had my own trap line, my own trails in that, it's just too bad for the guy. I wouldn't set him on purpose because I just feel sorry for the dog. I wouldn't want to catch a dog, but he's just got no business on him. I know right around here, but you'll have a trail. These guys with these snow goes, they got no business on your trapping trail. Still, they got to go. You might have traps on there, you know, for foxes or wolves. Of course, they run over them, and that's the end of the trap. They spring them. But that's a poor policy to follow another guy's trail. But just like I say, the road, you can't keep nobody off in the road. Hell, you might go out off the road now as the road setting traps. Somebody might be coming from Tanano with dogs. How do you know who's coming this way? Well, he's going to follow the road. If there's a trail, he's going to stay on it. And which you ain't got no business setting traps on a regular highway.
Yeah, right. Did you want to ask some more things about family stuff and things like that?
Yeah, one of the things, you know, we covered a lot of your younger days, but we didn't talk too much about, like, your family and Dixie, you know, being a real important part of your life. And just, you know, what's that like? Well, like raising raising children.
Oh, well, I had to go through the same old thing, you know.
Well, you must have done something right with Dixie. She says that, you know, you're just about the most important hero she's got.
Well, that raised her, you know, most of her life was with me, you know. And she turned out all right, pretty good.
Yeah, she's doing pretty good. Yeah, you can take care of herself.
What was that like? Like, a lot of that time you were just a single parent, too, trying to raise a daughter. That's pretty
well, unusual. When I was around, all I had her and by my, you know, then I'd go, I'd have to, so late year, when she was farmer out, like, there was different women would take care of her year for me, you know, and I'd go if I had to go out work or when I was trapping and go or... Like Betty Flegel was one. She took a lot of care of her for me. She took a lot of care of her for me. And then Judy Woods is another one I'd leave her with. Of course, some kids is all grown, you know, kids her age. And she was in good care with them. And then, of course, when I'd come in, she'd... Then one year I left her with a guy. He's a teacher. You're Jack Murphy. You probably heard of him. He taught school here, and him and his wife. And he'd take care of her... They had four or five kids, too, and about her age, and they wanted her to stay with the kids, you know. She's a little bit older, you know, and she kind of looked after them a little bit. Didn't really take care of them, you know, but got along with them good. And, yeah, there were different people around you to take care of her. I never had no trouble leaving her. And if I had to go to work, could somebody take her in a minute, you know, because they knew I had to make a living or get out trap or whatever I was doing. But then when I was around here all the time, I took care of her myself. And then, of course, when she went to school, and then when she got older and out of here, then her half-brother, Daryl, he took care of her 2 or 3 years up in Fairbanks. He was up there living, and she went to school up there a couple of years.
For high school?
Yeah. But she didn't like it up there. She come back and took that corresponding course. She didn't care for Fairbanks.
What kind of things did you teach her? It seems like she likes to cut wood with you.
Oh, she'd go out cut wood with me. She's better than lots of these guys. She never was lazy there. Like to get out and cut wood around the house here, you know. She'd pack the wood, and you wouldn't have to tell her. And she knew she had to do it, she'd do it. And, like, go get water. I had a little hand sled. Well, she was pretty good size then. She'd go put a couple of buckets of water on and haul water and, like, doing dishes and that. She's always good on that. Never had much trouble getting her to do dishes. And then when she got bigger, you know, she'd watch me cooking. And she wanted to know how, too, you know, and... tell her as much as I knew about it. Till she got old enough, you know, and then she had an idea of her own. She'd get out the cookbook when she got to, she could read good and then.
Well, did she ever want to learn trapping or anything about
I used to take her out a little bit, but not much. When I had snow go, she'd come with me and that. But cutting wood and that, she always liked to go out and cut wood with me, you know. She'd pile it if I cut it, you know, drag it up to the truck or on a pile or limb, and she'd drag the brush out of the way, you know. So pretty good that way. Always liked that wood.
Well, you're still pretty close, aren't you?
She likes to go out
cutting wood with you.
Oh, she'll go out, I'll cut the wood, and she'll take the truck and go out and haul it, and... That's the way she reduces, she said. I bought her, when she's getting old enough, she could handle a saw pretty good, a Swede saw, you know, and I bought one of them little ones, you know, and I'd bring the wood in 4 foot, I had dogs then, you know, and I'd haul it in and small stuff, you know, and she'd throw it on a saw buck and buck wood, too.
How old was she when she started doing that?
She's pretty young, just about 10 years old, 10, 11 years old. She started pooing around, cutting wood.
Well, when was she born anyway?
She's 24. She'll be 25 in March, 1950. That'd be 57, wouldn't it? 1957.
Well, were there any other single parents around in town, you know, like a guy or a woman had a kid?
Well, there were, different people with kids around here?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, there was quite a few when she was growing up around here. Dart's kids, you know, they were a little bit older, but they were still in. Then Bill Burke over there, he had them kids of his, and Woods had that bunch, and Flegel's was here. And then across the slough, Lanning's had a couple. And I guess that was about it around here. Oh, there'd be somebody move in once in a while, and a few kids that they didn't last long. They move somewhere else, you know. Yeah, there was always a... In her time, there was always a few families around here with kids.
Well, now, she's got some half-brothers, huh?
Yeah.
Who are they?
Well,
do they live here?
Yeah, I raised a whole bunch for a while there. There was five of them. Daryl and Bob, and then there's Johnny and two girls, Carolee and Jeannie. Of course, they're all married now, grown up, you know. But Bob, he's living out of Lake Minchumna most of the time. He's in this Johnny, he's the youngest, he's living there, he's married. And Daryl, he's living in Anchorage. And then the two girls, one is out in, I don't know, she's either in Wyoming or he's a school, her husband's a school teacher. She was one too before she married. And they taught school in Tanana year for a year or two. And then this oldest girl, she was a teacher too. She taught out there in Los Angeles for a couple of years till she got married. Now she's got her own family out there. And but they're going to move out of there. They're going to sell out and move to Anchorage. They don't like it out there anymore. Too many people, they said.
Yeah. Okay. So... how did you meet Dixie's mother now? What's the story on that?
Oh, well, you see, I don't know.
Can you finish that side?
Not quite, almost. But now let's see. Oh, I know one other question I had here was, you had mentioned about Dan Green having a tunnel for where he kept meat.
Oh, yeah, he's the guy had the roadhouse, the first guy had the roadhouse here. It was at one time right where Tom Dean's living now, and then they moved it up there where the present place. And right across the slough there, he had a meat tunnel in there, into the hill. And they'd put their, it was froze in there, and they had doors, you know, and everything. So, and they'd take their meat in there. And it would last for quite a while, you know, stay froze.
So then, was it just permafrost?
That's all they had. And then he got when the engine started coming around, he got the coal. He had a big coal storage out there. It burnt down.
Oh, something else I noticed. We saw some old pictures of Manly in the archives at Fairbanks, and there were windmills and what else?
It looked like there was a couple windmills here in town.
Well, the NC had one right on that back porch, and they used that for pumping water. They had a big tank in the store. And they'd pump their water, fill up that tank, and then, of course, gravity water down there, drinking and washing dishes. And
mm-hmm. And then was there any kind of solar hot water heater? Looked like in one of those pictures, something on top of one of the roofs, deal they'd heat up water with.
No, they had coils in a stove was the only thing they had when I was around here, well, it was before my time. But I don't think it must have been something else.
Yeah, it could have been, I suppose. That picture was early, though. That was probably 1910, 1912, something like that.
And the coils in the stove, that was just for heating water?
Yeah, you know, just had coiled in on the pipes, you know. Had a tank, you know. That could have been something probably, too, maybe a fire for in the summer, you know, a safety fire, you know, for tank. That was before my time, though.
Boy, this place went through a lot of changes.
Oh, yeah, there is a lot. See, when I first come around here, there was still a lot of the old guy wasn't too old, you know what I mean? They were, that come up here in 98 in there, you know, a lot of them guys, the country was full of them, you know, was still out here mining and doing everything, you know. Of course, that's quite a while ago.